As students return to classes across the Commonwealth and across the nation, some will find they have access to something called a safe space on their campuses. While sounding like a not-so-controversial idea, the concept has both supporters and critics.
We create an environment that looks like the world out there. I mean, you don't push these kids off of campus and say, now you're going to go out in the workplace and you're never going to disagree with your boss, you're never going to have a coworker that challenges you. No, that's not true.
On this week's Eastern Standard, safe spaces on campus. Is this a good idea or a way for students to avoid the real world? We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment to the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Today, safe spaces is our topic, a term many of our listeners may not yet be familiar with. Actually, I learned about it in the last couple of weeks as our student producers suggested that we do a show on this topic. Criticized by some as opposing freedom of speech, these areas, often on college campuses, serve students who feel they are marginalized. Are they providing a harmful service, or are they providing a service, a beneficial service, or are they possibly harmful for the development of young people? Our guests today are going to weigh in, and we encourage you to consider being part of the conversation with your questions, your comments, and your personal stories on the topic of safe spaces. Feel free to write to us at any time, as at least one listener has already done, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. Or in a little bit, we'll open the phone lines. Feel free to go ahead to call if you'd like right now, as long as you're going to be patient and realize that we may not be speaking with you right away. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. I'd like to welcome to the studio, first up for the first segment of our program, Dr. Maida Mendel-Reyes. She is professor of social justice studies at Berea College. On National Leadership Team for Social Justice, organizes White People for Justice for Minorities. She is an associate professor at Berea College, received her PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. Dr. Maida Mendel-Reyes, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, another Dr., Matthew P. Winslow. Dr. Winslow is EKU professor in the Department of Psychology and a teaching enhancement coordinator. Matthew Winslow received his degree in social psychology and statistics at the University of Minnesota. Matthew, thank you so much for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
In just a few minutes, a little bit later, we will welcome to our conversation Marika Beck-Kuhn, Senior Program Officer for the Individual Rights Defense Program for FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. And we will get to Marika Beck-Kuhn in just a few minutes. But let's kick off our conversation, and if you could, perhaps Maida Mendel-Reyes, define for me this concept of safe spaces. I have certainly learned so much in the last couple of weeks, and I guess a lot of people have heard about this.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have heard about it, but I'm not so sure that everybody really understands the idea. A safe space is a space, often on a college campus, where people can go and be assured they're not going to be called names or otherwise disrespected on the basis of their race or sexual orientation or other things. It can be a whole building like a Black Cultural Center. It can be a professor's office like mine, where I have safe zone outside my door. I think what people misunderstand about safe spaces is people are not living in safe spaces. People are in a safe space maybe 1 hour or 2 hours a day. They're not sleeping there. They're not eating their dinner there. They're not studying. They might be studying there, but they're not taking their showers. They're not having their classes in there. People that take advantage of safe spaces do so because they're surrounded by situations, particularly people of color who are always surrounded by white people, where they can't guarantee they'll be respected.
Is there, you mentioned your office as a safe space. Are there other designated safe spaces on the campus at Berea College? And how would one know that that is the case?
Well, there really aren't. We've had a campaign to improve conditions for our students who are gay, lesbian, transgender, or sometimes they like to call themselves queer. And as a result, a number of us have gone to a training. And at the end of the training, which was about, you know, enabling us to better understand and work with these students, we were given a little sign, and we were given the opportunity to put it outside our door. That's the only safe space that I'm aware of, though I think you could probably say the Black Cultural Center is intended as a safe space, except white people go there, so it really doesn't fit the technical definition.
Is that generally the case where campuses declare such safe spaces, that they erect some kind of signage, some kind of labeling that indicates that?
That's a really great question, and I'm not sure. I have to say that I'm not sure.
Matthew Winslow, what about on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University? Is there a movement, and has there been an effort to designate safe spaces?
Well, I have to say that I was told by Lisa Day, who is a faculty member at Eastern, to let you know that on Eastern's campus, there is a safe space in the new Alphabet Center. It's in Weaver 305. And it's also a safe space when they do Take Back the Night, their event. So that's also a safe space. So we have some on this campus. Just to follow up on what Maida said, I think I'm a white man, and so most of the places I go are safe spaces. I live my life generally in a safe space, and so I think it's important to realize that that's not true for many people. But, you know, as a white man, the idea of a safe space seems a little absurd to me, because I've never really needed one, because my life is lived in a safe space almost entirely. And it's only rare occasions where I go someplace where I feel like I'm not in a safe space. But for lots of people, that's not true. They feel the opposite. And that's why the idea of us having a place, or maybe a time-limited space, like Take Back the Night, would be a really attractive people or attractive idea for some people. The idea that they could go and relax and not have to worry about threats or being violated or aggressed upon just because of who they are. That's just not a thought that comes into my mind on a daily basis because of who I am. And so that's a luxury that I enjoy. So the need for a safe space for me is totally unnecessary.
You mentioned the Alphabet Center on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. I have the description here. It's a fairness organization on EKU's campus dedicated to the fair and equal treatment of all students and people within the EKU community and surrounding areas. The Alphabet Center focuses on three core values: activism, affirmation, and awareness, that all members are to promote around the campus. These values not only reflect in our members, but also in events we host throughout the semester. The Alphabet Center, also a safe place to go if you feel like you need a place to get away from persecution or harassment from your peers. The idea, again, is that, I mean, it's like a retreat, a place you can go into, a man cave, a chapel, a space that you would say, hey, I need a break.
That's right,
Yeah, I just really think what Matt said a little while ago is really important. As white people, we're dominant. We can be among ourselves anytime we choose to be. And if you go onto a college campus, that may be very much what you see. But no one calls those safe spaces. So it reminds me a little bit of the term political correctness, in the sense that a term that was originally invented to help people that were being discriminated against or otherwise treated as a minority is all of a sudden now targeted, and the issues aren't targeted. We're not talking about racial harassment on campus today. We're talking about safe spaces.
Earlier this week, Eastern Kentucky University's president, Dr. Michael Benson, gave his annual convocation address to an audience comprised mainly of faculty and staff. And one of the things that he mentioned is his desire for the university, the academy, referring back to a quote from an author and I can't recall the reference, but referring to the campus as a place where civil discourse can occur, especially in the midst of this year's hotly contested presidential race. After his talk, I pulled Dr. Benson aside and I asked him about his opinion of safe spaces on college campuses.
When you step foot on a campus as an 18-year-old freshman, and if you're a non-traditional student, maybe you've had more life experiences, but our job is to create an environment that in many ways replicates the world that you're going to kind of go into as a working adult. And for kids to come out of high school, maybe it's the first time away from home, and step foot on the campus and all of a sudden feel like they need to be enshrouded in this cocoon of safety, as you call it, I think is a disservice to them. It's not fulfilling our role as a university, which, as the name suggests, one, to turn into one, not because we all believe the same thing, but we're all committed to this idea of creating an environment where kids can explore, they can be challenged, they can challenge others, again, civilly, and with respect and manners, but we create an environment that looks like the world out there. I mean, you don't push these kids off of campus and say, now you're going to go out in the workplace and you're never going to disagree with your boss, you're never going to have a coworker that challenges you. No, that's not true. Believe me. And if universities are going to say, look, we're going to create all these safe spaces and make sure kids aren't exposed to ideas that challenge them or make them uncomfortable, I don't agree with that.
That's Dr. Michael Benson, president of Eastern Kentucky University. And I will admit to in the question I asked him, ask about, you know, what do you think about this concept of safe spaces, these cocoons where people can go to get away from things that are threatening. Maida Mendel-Reyes and Matthew Winslow, how do you react to what Dr. Benson had to say?
Well, for one thing, I think he's absolutely right. I think our responsibility as educators is to prepare students for the world. But the world is not a place of safety. The world is a place where if they're African-American, they're likely to be, we know, three times more likely to be arrested and so much more likely to be imprisoned if they're not actually shot during an encounter with the police. I think we need to prepare people by being realistic about the world that we live in. That's one point. The other point I would just say quickly is if a person is in a safe space for an hour or 2 hours every other day, they're still in class, they're still conducting civil discourse. This all-or-nothing approach to thinking about safe space, I think it's just not being realistic about what we're preparing our students for.
Matthew Winslow?
Yeah, I would say it's what you're trying to save people from is a really important distinction. So in my classes, my academic discourse, I'm not going to save anybody from because it's what we're trying to teach them. But I think safe spaces are on campus and college campuses are not about saving, you know, escaping from the content of our college courses or even the discourse on campus necessarily. It's a place to go where you can have a brief respite from feeling like you are in danger of being slandered or aggressed upon just because of who you are. And that's not really about what I teach in my class. And I would hope that the world that we're pushing our students out into after they graduate is one that we, if we can make it one, where they don't have to worry about being the victims of those kinds of aggressions. I don't think we should just accept that, well, the world's a tough place, so, you know, deal with it. I think, you know, part of the university would be creating students who would go out and make those kinds of aggressions less likely, whether they are the victims or the perpetrators. So I don't think we want to shelter them from this idea of aggression or being insulted, or I don't think we want to save them from that, but we want to prepare them for that.
In a few moments, we will introduce Marika Beck-Kuhn of FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. And we're going to encourage you to be part of our conversation. What do you think about this concept of the safe spaces on college campuses? Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or give us a call, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard, and we'll be right back.
Safe space.
People don't judge me and haters don't hate in my safe space.
Your safe space.
Bullyproof windows, troll safe doors, nothing but kindness and heat.
You might call me a pussy, but I won't hear you in my safe space.
Bullyproof windows, troll safe doors, a clip from, the TV series South Park. Apparently, again, I didn't know it, missed the episode dealing with the concept of safe spaces. That's our topic on this week's Eastern Standard, and we're interested in hearing from you. Please feel free to interact with us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. www.wekuest.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or call 800-621-8890. What do you think about this concept? Are you a skeptic? Are you a supporter? Is there a need for more safe spaces? One thing I wanted to acknowledge is that I understand that at the UK, the University of Kentucky, they have an LGBTQ and Friends community room that is an intentionally inclusive space on the UK campus. Now, we had reached out to Lance Poston at the University of Kentucky, and we're not able to work that out. So sorry we're unable to get him involved in this conversation, but we're interested in folks from throughout our region interacting on this very topic of safe spaces on campus. In the studio, Dr. Maida Mendel-Reyes, professor of social justice studies at Berea College, and Dr. Matthew Winslow, EKU professor in the Department of Psychology. And joining us now by telephone is Marika Beck-Kuhn, senior program officer in the Individual Defense Rights Program for the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, FIRE. Marika Beck-Kuhn, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me your position on safe spaces. I understand that you are probably more than a skeptic, maybe an opponent to the concept of safe spaces.
No, that's not right. There are many different uses of the term of safety or safe spaces on campus that are used by the media, by students, by campus communities. And the type of safe spaces that Professors Winslow and Mendel-Reyes were speaking of, you know, designated physical spaces where students can go to feel safe to comfortably be oneself or to explore painful ideas or topics like a sexual assault survivors group. Those are one type of use of the term. And those are great and necessary on every campus. The kind of distinction that we make in our work at FIRE is thinking of the distinction between the idea of safety or safe spaces as a shield or a sword. So what we mean by that is thinking of the idea of a safe space as a shield is part of your First Amendment rights, part of your First Amendment rights includes the right to freedom of association. You have a right to self-determine and cultivate the space around you and the space that you share with others. And that's totally fine. The problem, I think, that comes up when we're talking about the freedom of expression and that we've heard a lot about in the media over the last year arises when the concept of safety is used in the affirmative as a sword, when it's used as a weapon to demand control over expression in public spaces or other forums for speech. So it comes up a lot in conversations over what it means for a college itself to be a safe space. And it came up a lot last fall when after student protests, which started at University of Missouri so powerfully last fall. We saw protests at campuses all over the country. And the word safety came up quite a bit in terms of students' requests for administrations to prohibit or prevent certain conversation or words or any concepts from being shared publicly on campus. For instance, there's calls for banning of hate speech on campus in all spaces and forums, and that's where it becomes the concept of discomfort or safety becomes problematic in terms of talking about what the administration, what you're asking the administration to prevent.
So we're talking about First Amendment rights here. Your organization, your position is that we institutions should not be taking action to prohibit folks from exercising their rights of free speech.
In open forums on campus that are that are, you know, your public forums or in your classes. That in forums that are designated for discussion and for speech or for kind of or spaces on campus where you have full protection of the First Amendment, such as, you know, out on the quad or in physically public forums, that your First Amendment rights have to be respected on a public campus.
You mentioned the University of Missouri demonstration. I'm trying to think if this was the case. I remember seeing a video of a situation in which a reporter was trying to get access to students and folks on campus and to do some interviewing, and folks were stepping forward, including a university professor, and maybe someone else has some clarification on this. But this staff member, professor at the university was saying, "No, the reporter can't come in here. This is a safe space, or this is a protected zone." I'm wondering, Maida Mendel-Reyes, you look like you're familiar with this issue.
Yeah, I thought I was. I thought it had to do with the fraternity students on a bus that were singing racist songs. Do you remember, Marika? What were you thinking?
Yeah, no, that was a different. That was
okay.
That was a different situation. I believe what you're referring to on the University of Missouri campus was an incident last fall where after the president had stepped down. There was a group of students that had been camped out on the quad and were there post-resignation and had decided that they wanted a media free zone, that they didn't want student media or outside media to be bothering their encampment. So the students and faculty and some administrators, I believe, but including the professor that you're referring to, Melissa Click, they created joined hands and created a ring around the encampment to keep the student reporter that was videotaping that and other reporters out of the encampment that was on the quad.
And I remember seeing that, and as a journalist and a broadcaster myself, being appalled at that, saying, how can we do this? Isn't this what we do? Isn't this what journalism does, especially in a public space? Another question you mentioned, Marika, you mentioned free speech on the quad at the campus, et cetera. I'm thinking in terms of on this very campus at Eastern Kentucky University, every once in a while going through the area outside the student center, the fountain area, and finding Christian preachers preaching, of course, very forcefully, and wondering the appropriateness of that. I mean, how do you feel about issues of that type? I mean, should campuses as institutions, publicly funded to a great extent, allow that kind of speech or
should
speech,
they allow
on, speech
the,
on the other
classic
side?
Classic itinerant preacher.
Yeah.
It comes up a lot because there are a lot of itinerant preachers on a lot of campuses.
Sure are.
And there's, you know, the case law is mixed as far as whether universities have to allow outside speakers that are unassociated in any way with the college campus, whether they have to allow them under the First Amendment to say what they like in the public areas of their campus. Case law is varied on that kind of nationwide, but once a school has made the decision to, if they've made the decision to allow outside speakers on campus, such as your, you know, friendly neighborhood itinerant preacher, once you've made that decision, then you can't discriminate between the preacher who's yelling nasty things at the students passing by and the and somebody who's got the opposite message but is also yelling nasty things at the students that go by. You can't discriminate between messages.
Yeah, when that kind of thing has happened on our campus, and it has been itinerant preachers, what we have done is students that are wanting to do this, as well as faculty and staff, we go out and we hold signs talking about how, in our case, it's God has made of one blood all peoples of the earth. Then they keep talking, and we're silently demonstrating a different point of view.
So speech generates speech.
Yeah, I think that is the solution most of the time to free speech issues, is more speech, that if you hear something that you don't like, that you do respond. But I think there are gray areas that are hard to think about but need to be thought about. I'm on the radio station of a public university right now. I could start swearing at John, for example.
We've got a button.
I could use. All right, but I mean, that would not be appropriate. There would be limits.
Right.
And I think consistent, I certainly would agree with Marika that it could you could go too far, but I think certainly a private college, but I would argue public too, has certain responsibilities to uphold certain kinds of values, and it's appropriate to act on those.
Well, taking this conversation into another logical direction, I think, in the midst of this presidential campaign, are we likely to see on our college campuses the conflict of ideas that is perhaps most defined in anything? I've seen a lot of elections over the course of my life, and this is kind of an odd one with an awful lot of very, very strong speech and some forceful rhetoric, whether it's coherent or not, but there are some strong, strong feelings. How do campuses and other institutions deal with the volatility of the speech that's being generated in today's political environment?
Well, I think the answer is more speech. But for me, I would hope on EKU's campus that we would have more discussion about politics rather than less. I've been here for 18 years, and so through several elections, and I've always thought that we would benefit from having more discussions on this campus, more noise, more light, more heat, just to get us engaged in the conversation more. So I hope that there are students and faculty out listening to this who will try to get more engaged in the political process. But it's obviously got to be done in a respectful way. I think it can be, and I think it's got to be informed by facts and perspectives. But, I think that the answer is definitely going to be more speech. Let's get out there and talk about it, and hopefully we can urge everyone on our campus to do what we urge our students to do, which is to take positions that are backed up with facts and reason. And I think if we do that, we'll be in great shape.
I guess I would just like to add, I teach a course this fall on women and African Americans in politics. So I know there's going to be this issue inside my class. And I think that's important to note, because there are places where people can have this free expression under certain guidelines. Even on campuses that also have safe spaces. What we do in my class is we, at the very beginning, before we even start, we talk about what are the guidelines that we want for this discussion, and I ask them, and they say things like respect, open mind, assume the person has good intentions. We all agree to them. They go up on the computer, and that is what we do to ensure that we're having a respectful conversation, but also a free one. I think you can do both. I really do.
This is Eastern Standard. Safe spaces on college campuses is our topic on this week's program. Our show is an interactive show, so we're interested in hearing from you. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest if you can give your message in 140 characters or less, or call 800-621-8890. Lines are open right now if you'd like to be part of the conversation, 800-621-8890. Here's an email from listener Tom, who writes, "It seems to me that both guests," and I think he's referring to Maida and Matthew, "both guests hold left-leaning views, and that many safe spaces appear to be designed to shield students from conservative opinions regarding race and gender. Are there any conservative professors in the departments of our guests, and would they consider conservatives to be an oppressed group on campus deserving of a safe space?"
Well, speaking for me, we do have conservative members of my department, as well as I know across campus. I think the emailer is correct that generally the academy is pretty left-leaning. And so there is a conservative student group on campus, and I assume that even though they might not advertise it as such, there are meetings they would consider to be a safe space. And that's fine with me. I have no problem if they wanted to establish some room on campus where it was going to be safe for conservatives. I have no problem with that at all. So that's fine with me. And I'm sympathetic to conservatives in the academy talking about how they are in the minority and that their viewpoints have been not as well represented. And so I invite them to, I'm not sure come out is the right term, but maybe come out.
I would just add that while conservatives may be in the minority on campuses, they're certainly not in the minority in society. And I find that in some of the classes that I teach, students have not heard a different perspective. We're in Kentucky. We're the reddest state in the nation. Students will not necessarily have heard a left perspective because they're living in a world where conservatives are so well represented. I know the conservatives tend to I'll just say it and you can argue against it. I think sometimes the conservatives act as if they're being persecuted when in reality they're running the show.
Marika Beck-Kuhn of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education.
Well, I would just say that it's that I think that sometimes I would echo Dr. Winslow in saying that we might not be thinking about all of the clubs and organizations that we form in our lives generally as safe spaces, but in a lot of ways they are. And we form online communities with like-minded people. We have drug and alcohol support groups. We have, and the term in it originally came from LGBT-friendly bars in the 1960s. I mean, we have we have country clubs. We have social clubs. We have all kinds of ways that we organize ourselves to feel comfortable and feel heard in our daily lives. And I would just encourage everybody to kind of think about that when you're thinking about this concept of what it means to create a safe space on campus, and and again going back to this kind of shield versus sword analogy that I made in the beginning, it's like, are you the idea of a shield? Are you protecting yourself and creating a space that is safe for you to explore painful ideas or difficult ideas?
We're going to take another short break. I'm sorry, Marika Beck-Kuhn, we're going to come back to you. This is Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. Feel free to get on the line and be part of today's show as we talk about safe spaces.
I am going to tear down your safe space. Brick by brick, I shall smash it with glee.
What? Who is that?
You cannot stop me from getting inside. I am cold and I am hard, and my name is reality.
Oh no, not reality.
Safe spaces, our topic on this week's Eastern Standard. You're welcome to be part of the conversation by writing to us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or give us a call, 800-621-8890. With us in the studio, Dr. Maida Mendel Reyes, Professor of Social Justice Studies at Berea College. Dr. Matt Winslow, EKU professor in the Department of Psychology, and on the line, Marika Beck-Kuhn, Senior Program Officer with the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. I'm sorry I cut you off for the station break. Marika, did you get a chance to finish your idea? I'm not sure where I cut you off.
Just to finish out the thought, I would probably ask anybody who's thinking or who's trying to figure out how they feel about the idea of safe spaces to think about it in terms of whether you're trying to create you're talking about creating a space where you have where you're with people who make it comfortable for you to be yourself and explore ideas, or whether you're talking about using the idea of safety, of your own safety, as a means to reach into other spaces or forums to try and silence others. So that kind of shield versus sword idea. And that's, again, I mean, in speaking of it in terms of when there's a concern to freedom of expression, which is obviously what FIRE is concerned with.
Let's turn back to our listeners expressing themselves. And here's an email we received actually before the program. This is from Davey and Jeannie. They write, "Our daughter has been leading an effort to create safe zones at Woodford County High School, where she is a senior. The idea is to train teachers who volunteer for the program to serve as a resource for LGBT students facing unique challenges related to sexual orientation and gender identity. She presented her proposal to the school administration but has not yet gotten approval. The biggest hurdle seems to be convincing them of the need for this. The University of Kentucky has agreed to provide the training at no cost, and they have already trained teachers in Fayette and Jessamine County schools. Thanks for bringing attention to this issue." Thank you, Davey and Jeannie, for your email. Comments, Maida or Matthew?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that their biggest hurdle is getting the idea accepted by people, because, again, for most people, the idea of a safe space seems sort of silly. Why would you need safety from the world? Because my world is pretty safe. But for people who are in minority positions, the world is not as safe as it is for the rest of us. And so for them, they really need a safe space. But it's a matter of perspective, and I would say power, that makes it difficult for some people to understand what the value of a safe space would be. And I would especially say that's true for young people in high school or younger. Their worlds are chaotic and scary to begin with. And if you're a member of some minority group, that's even more difficult. And so for them to have a place on their school campus, in their school building, that they could go, that they know would be a place where they could relax and be safe and not have to worry so much, I think would be an incredibly powerful and attractive and necessary option. But again, one that would be hard to understand if you're not one of those people.
I guess I would add also that all of us have multiple identities, and in some of those identities we're dominant and others we're not. I'm a lesbian, so I identify with LGBTQ, and I know that even saying that on the radio is not without risk. I'm white. So when I'm white, I can't experience what people that are not white are experiencing, and I need to be aware of that. I remember talking with a woman who was white and who said, "There's no racism in Berea," and my first reaction was, "How would you know?" Hmm. So I think the only answer I think is to really listen to people, and if people think they need an LGBTQ place the way their daughter does, I think that needs to be respected.
Let's go to the phone and talk to Rachel from Berea, who is on the line. Rachel, thank you so much. I understand you're a pastor in Berea?
Yes, I'm one of the pastors at Union Church in Berea, the same place where Maida is a professor at the college. I wanted to call in and say that our church created a safe space for LGBTQ people following the Orlando shootings, because we were getting so many calls from people who were feeling like they weren't safe anywhere. And we realized that there are a few safe spaces on the college campus, but outside of that, it's pretty much a free-for-all. And the free speech that people in power are able to give as speech is actually causing a lot of harm and mental damage to people who are struggling in the minority and are finding themselves, often just in a lot of mental pain and need a place where they can get together, because it's not just free speech, it's actually harmful speech for them. And so that's my pushback toward the free speech argument, is that free speech, yes, should be granted always, but the speaker also needs to realize that their speech has consequences, and that they may not be the ones who feel the consequences the strongest.
Rachel, thank you. We appreciate your call, and we'll invite listeners who share Rachel's view. I'm interested in skeptics. We're not hearing from any skeptics at the moment. Of course, this is public radio, but we're interested in hearing from those who might think that this concept of safe spaces is silly or that is an overreaction to the perceived threats that some persons may experience. 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST.
I might be able to provide a bit of a different perspective on this. There are some people who have talked about safe spaces as sort of, how do I say this, promoting the idea that people are fragile and that we need to protect people from the world around them because they're so fragile that they need their protection. And I think that that can, in some ways, undermine the resiliency that people generally have. So some people are critics of the safe space idea because, again, it kind of rests on this assumption that people are too fragile to listen to criticism, to be out in this real rough and tumble world. Now, I think that has some value, and as a psychologist, I would say that people are generally resilient, and we should encourage that and celebrate that when it happens. I would also say that, again, it's a bit of a power and perspectives problem for some people to tell other people, well, you're just not resistant and you're just too fragile. I'm very uncomfortable saying that to people generally. While I would want to encourage people to be resilient and to call upon their resilience, and as an educator, I really want to encourage people to fight for themselves and to realize what they can do in response to the world around them and deal with it and cope with it in an effective way, and we really can do that. I'm also aware that a kind of historical and continued insults and oppression really has a harmful effect, and it does make people, I'm not sure fragile, but certainly more vulnerable to those insults. So I think it's a balance. I think you need to really have a balance about how you think about these things.
If we think in terms of safe spaces on college campuses or perhaps in high schools and institutions of higher education or of other educational institutions, to what extent can this concept be taken further? I mean, can we expect a movement toward safe spaces in the workplace, safe spaces in society in general? We have, spaces for smokers, in airports or whatever. Can we expect that, we would want to where can someone who is concerned about their safety or their emotional fragility expect to have this kind of an opportunity?
Well, just speaking to the idea of how far can we take the idea of safe spaces on just specifically on campus, I think that's where you see some of the skeptics come in terms of how big is a safe space. On campus specifically, you've seen calls for or students discussing feeling unsafe on campus generally, or my campus needs to be a safe space for me. So then having the conversation about what it means for campus to be a safe space, I think is where you see a lot of the tension in the conversation.
I guess I would say that a campus, a college, a university is a unique kind of space. While all students don't live on campus, many do. It's a 24-hour location. I think there aren't that many spaces like that in the rest of the world, and that might be a difference. The point I would just like to say about resilience is we're individuals, and we need to be resilient, but we're also members of a community. I think you'll find that people that go into safe space develop resilience as a result of realizing they're not alone, and then they can go out and be even stronger.
Rather than becoming dependent on the safe space as a, as an escape?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, everybody knows life is not a safe space. This is just something that I think is extremely important, especially for students to have the support of their campuses in doing.
Let's go back to the phone, and let me get Kevin on the air. Kevin calling, I guess, from Richmond. Thank you, Kevin. You're on the air.
All right. I would just like to add a little bit of a more skeptical opinion on how good safe spaces can be. I feel like that this creates an echo chamber for a lot of what starts feeling more like hate towards people like me. I've long been a liberal, and I've long been voting Democrat, but I feel like I'm being pushed away from my own movement that I feel like I was a part of because I'm white and I'm cisgender and I'm male, and it seems like it creates a place for people to go to say that I'm part of the problem, and this is something I've experienced in a small way. I feel like there's a few of my friends that they feel the same way, that, you know, they may be gay or just otherwise normal people, but because they have something that they feel like they're being pushed away from society, they feel like I'm completely normal, like quote normal, that I'm a part of the problem. I'm not with them. That means I'm against them. But in reality, I've been with them the whole time. And these safe spaces create those issues a little bit more. I feel like it's more like an overcorrection to the problem. There is a problem, obviously. There is racism in the country. And there's definitely homophobia. But this certainly feels like an overcorrection. And I always thought that this is what organizations like clubs were for. And I feel like there's going to be people like me that feel like they're not going to be allowed to go into these safe spaces because they might have a dissenting opinion on how this whole movement's being handled. Mm.
So again, an overcorrection versus, I mean, what could occur? What do we need in our society that we don't need this overcorrection? What is the correction? What is the evolution, I guess, that could negate the need for safe spaces?
Well, like, I felt like it was moving along really well throughout my lifetime, and then it just started becoming more and more visceral towards white privilege, as it were. And I would say that a lot of the systemic racism that a lot of people see comes from the militarization of the police in the war on drugs. That's a totally different topic, but it does. I mean, you could certainly be educating people more on how that goes and how to stop that and be. I'm just surprised to see that this that the social justice movement hasn't talked more about the war on drugs and how racist it is, and it with surgical precision attacks minorities. And that's the movement that I was hoping for, and I feel like I'm being targeted now.
Kevin, thank you so much for your thoughtful comments. We're going to move on. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Safe spaces, our topic on today's program. How do we react to what Kevin has to say, that as a white cisgender male, the safe spaces movement is kind of a reaction against him, against us?
Well, to be honest, I found Kevin's comments to be very moving and sincere. But I would say, and I'm speaking as a white person right now, that we are part of the problem, and that part of building a society based on justice and equality is acknowledging our privilege. And I think there's different ways to do that. When we organize in showing up for racial justice, we work specifically with white people, organizing white people for racial justice. That makes a lot of sense. People of color don't necessarily need more white people to come in and tell them what to do. The other thing I would just say is I think it's possible to build relationships across lines. We're talking about safe spaces here, but I would also just like to say I think the way things we get past the divisions that we have in our societies, for people to really reach out, for white people to reach out to people of color, for low-income people to reach out to another low-income person of a different race or a different religion. It's hard. It's hard. It takes a while to build a relationship, but I think that's our only hope.
Marika Beck-Kuhn?
I would just add kind of a hopeful thought about campuses specifically. I mean, universities are the ideal place to create the opportunity for speaking across differences and building coalitions and testing yourself and testing your thoughts. I mean, it's the role of a university to create to both allow students to create different forums for themselves and to create opportunity for discussion and debate and difference. I mean, it's a university is a unique place in that it has both almost every university and I've seen in the entire country expresses values of welcomeness and inclusivity alongside promises and commitments to freedom of expression, academic freedom, and debate. So
let me get Matthew Winslow in here for 30 seconds. Anything further you want to add as we wrap this up?
Well, I would just echo what Meta said about him, the caller being very honest, and I could kind of hear his pain, not to be a psychologist, in his voice. But I would tell him, your allies in this movement just need a minute to themselves, and I think we should grant them that minute.
Well, thank you all for your giving us an hour to discuss this topic of safe spaces on campus on this week's Eastern Standard. We've heard from Matthew Winslow of the EKU Professor, EKU Department of Psychology, Marika Beck-Kuhn of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, and Maida Mendel Reyes of Berea College. Thank you all for being part of our show. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Associate producers Grant Willoughby, Marissa Hempel, and Brian Burkhart. Brian Bartlett on the phones. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for being part of today's program.